On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, Ben offers a unique idea for how to improve his game and to break par. We talk about Tony Finau's win on the PGA and if this might open the floodgates for him. Has a spanner been thrown into the works of the US Ryder Cup team? Plus, we test how well Chris and Ben know the rules of golf with some, frankly, ridiculous situations. This is A Slice of Golf, hosted by myself, Tim Williams.
Me, Ben Fowlis.
And myself, Chris Wright.
Welcome along, folks. It's another episode of A Slice of Golf. I'm back this week. Sorry for leaving you boys in the lurch last week. By the way, I did listen back, and Chris, you're okay. You're excused. I definitely never told you where I was going.
Great, Ben, good.
Ben, I literally told you 2 days.
I know.
I felt like I did feel like I should have known as well. When we were speaking off air before, I was like, I'm sure he's told me, but I cannot for the life of me remember where he went.
Yeah, so turns out
a pretty big trip as well.
Yeah, it was quite a good one. Yeah,
are we allowed to share what happened?
Yeah, sure. So I got engaged last week. Which was very, very exciting, and yes, very, very, very happy.
Many congratulations.
Yeah, that is huge.
I think the boys have just about let me off from not being on the pod last week. So I think I've just about got away with non-pod duties from last week. But yes, very exciting times for Timbo. Thank you very much for your kind messages, fellas. But look, we're not here to talk about that. So let's crack on. Let's talk about what we've been doing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, I think, is the only person that's been out on the golf course in the last 7 days.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't. I've had a pretty. I'll kind of jump in where I've been. I've had a pretty shocking week on the old movement / golf / training front. I had. So I've spoken about before. I'm the not so proud owner of some pretty shit tattoos. In the process of getting rid of those, I had my last appointment last Monday. You're not allowed to basically stretch the skin and risk any infection. All that kind of crap, so I wasn't allowed to do anything all week. And then I had the vaccine Saturday morning, so that knocked me for six for 2 days. Yeah, that was my week. Yeah, absolutely. Killed me, it did. Well, not quite, but yeah, I was knocked out for the best part of a day and a half. Yeah, that was fun.
So fun week for you.
Yeah.
Chris.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start on your golf?
I'm going to start with the epic range session I had on Thursday. Absolutely loving life, striking the ball really nicely. And then woke up on Friday morning. I've been invited to play Purford with two other members of Sunday Red Golf. Early morning start, 7:30 tee time. I'm all okay getting up early for golf, but 7:30 tee time is early. What blew me away, as I was pulling in, as we were walking down to the first, people were coming off the ninth. Like,
what?
I spoke to the starter and I was like, what time do people start? And he was like, well, I got here at just after six and there was already four or five groups out. I was like, was it even light? He was like, just. I was like, wow, that's.
Can you imagine squeezing in 18 before you start your day of work?
Excellent. I've got no issues with that. But immediately it was.
I'd be done. My working day would be done at like 1 o'clock. I'd be dead. I just wouldn't be able to have it
at 1 o'clock anyway.
After 18 holes, mate, you struggle to get me off the sofa. I'm not gonna lie.
But they were obviously like flying around. But yeah. Like obviously, like early morning golf. I just, as long as it was good, it was sunny, it was nice. Like it was a nice little dew on the ground. The course looked in excellent condition, and I was like, today is going to be a good day. Teed off on the first, fairly standard. Bogeyed the first, went a very weird way round on the course. It's a dogleg left. I kind of cut the corner off, went onto another hole accidentally, obviously, and then hit an approach shot, went a bit too far. Second hole, par three. Birdied it, just hit I was standing on the tee. I was like, I haven't had a warm up. I feel super, super stiff. Like that is, I've never felt quite so like stiff, like hitting golf shots. I was just like, I really needed a warm up. Like I really, really needed, should have warmed up. The nets, they didn't have any mats on the nets. I think the nets are out of operation at the moment, but I was like, this was an error, really needed to do this. So I was like, I'm going to, I took an extra club because I was like, I'm cold, I'm clearly not moving very well. And put it to about 2 feet. I was like, well, this is delightful. So at this point here, I'm like, I'm going to have a bloody good day. I mean, I'm just going to have a good day. And then I think I proceeded to lose roughly 2 balls every hole from there on out. And yeah.
Are you kind of bit tongue in cheek when you say lose?
Yeah, I'm exaggerating for sure.
Good.
Exaggerating for sure. I didn't actually lose 16 balls or whatever that would have, no more than that, 20, I don't remember when they came out. But yeah, no, it was, I lost a lot of balls. I reckon I lost 3 on one hole, mainly because I lost one. And in fact, on the ninth, and this is where I was like, today's just not going to be my day. The greenkeeper was driving up the fairway, like toward the target. You guys both play Purford. It's, yep. Is it par 5? Drive, beautiful drive, middle of the fairway. And I thought, if I can just pick up 2 points here, I'd have been on, I think it was like 13. If I picked up 2 points there, I'd have been on 15 points. I'd have been like, okay, this isn't disastrous. Put it in the middle of the fairway. Greenkeeper driving up in his van up the fairway, or actually just off the fairway, to be fair. But on the left-hand side, water all down the right. And I was like, I kind of want to aim towards the car. And he stopped. And I was like, I'd really prefer it if you just, like, came past me. He wasn't bugging. So
thin a missile at the greenkeeper.
So here I was sitting in the middle of the fairway. I thought, I my line is really the car. And I was like, this is quite off-putting. And so I hit my shot and absolutely just sliced it. I was playing a 4-iron, sliced it straight into the water. And I was just like, oh, fuck. I was just like, I'm not blaming the greenkeeper. I'm blaming my ability to not be able to block that out from my, like, kind of my thought process, my mind. I then walked up to the water, furious, and just chunked the next one into the water. It went about 20 feet. Right, okay. And then I kind of already in my head written it off, and I was like, well, I'm just going to hit another one just to prove that I can do it. And completely messed that up as well. And it landed about 2 feet short and didn't go in the water. And I was like, yep, this is, I need to walk out of this headspace immediately. So just walked along and was like, okay, I'm going to have my, as you said, Ben, 10 yards of anger and then move on. But yeah, it didn't get any better on the back nine. I proceeded to just double bogey my way around really and just get 1 point, which was really, really depressing. And we all know Purford. Purford's tough, right? There's a lot of water. That wasn't the issue. The issue was just shit golf. Just couldn't swing the golf club. That, like, and sure, it resulted in the ball going into the water or into thick rough or whatever. But it was, if I'd just been playing any kind of normal, like, golf, anything towards my normal game, it wouldn't have been that much of an issue. But yeah, so absolute disaster. But all three of us had an absolute shit show. So I was kind of safe in the knowledge. I think I lost by 1 point and I was on 25 points, I think. So it wasn't a great golf on show. Good chat for an early morning. It's fantastic. Just chat around as you're walking around the golf course. But yeah, so overall, a bit of a shocker. Kind of not really sure what to think about it either. I'm going to go to the range this week. So I haven't got a round booked in, but I'm going to go to the range this week and just see if it was what I was doing or if it was just one of those rounds where you're like, no, that was just, that day was not going to be your day.
Well, yeah, you did follow trend of, was it rule number 3 of a good range session is always followed by a terrible round. So, yeah. I mean, you start with the rules, which is good to see. Yeah.
And then a fairly amusing for me happened. I got home, took the clubs out of the car, thought, right, I'm actually going to clean these tonight.
Put them down. I was just waiting for you to say, right, they're having it. And you just launched them.
So I put them down. And later on that evening, I go, right, I'm going to clean the clubs. So come down, start cleaning the clubs. And I was like, shut up. I'm a club missing. And I was like, oh, no. And I cleaned all the clubs. And I was like, I'm missing my 54 degree.
No.
I was like, No, because that's the 54 is the club that I use all around the green. Like that's one of my favourite clubs to for chipping around the green. And I was, and I know I used it on the 18th. I was in the bunker on the 18th, hit a worldie of a bunker shot to rescue a, I think it was to rescue a double bogey in the end. And I was like, I had it on the 18th. So I've lost it between what I think putting it back in my bag and getting home. So Saturday morning, I call Purford. They haven't got it. I call the two guys that I was with. They haven't got it. I'm like, how has this gone missing? To the point where I start thinking, okay, do I just get one replacement or can you have one new wedge? Do you then just go and get three new wedges? Like, so I started having these conversations, started Googling. I was like, what wedges would I get next? And then walk up into my office on Sunday morning. I was like, why is my wedge up here? I was like, it's here. I found it. How's it got here? And Shelley goes, oh, Noah took it out of your bag on Friday and was just walking around the house with it. I was like, brilliant. Noah's like, nearly 2-year-old had just yoinked out the bag and was just having a whale of a time walking around with one of my wedges. I was like, great. Okay, I'm delighted that I have not lost the wedge, although there was a 24-hour window of utter fear and dread of having to buy a new one and all of that. But
Be honest. Yeah. Was there a little bit of you that was quite excited about buying a new wedge?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. And it even got to the point where I was like, well, then I can't just buy one wedge. I'd have to get three. I can't just have one of this.
Obviously.
So you'd have to get three. So, but yeah, I was obviously very excited about that.
Fair.
Also, I'm quite excited that Noah decided that he was going to rob it out of my bag because maybe that means he's now going to like golf. In my head, that's not just it was a tool to just smash stuff in the garden with.
We can, but hope. I myself am also going to admit that I'm probably going to fall foul of our own rules because I also had a driving range session. I managed to squeeze it in at the weekend. As you guys talked about last week, my round the previous weekend, not my finest. Although mainly I would say down to just, for whatever reason, just not vibing it on my front nine, pulled it back a little bit on the back nine. But basically, I felt like I'd packed my stuff in the car, ready to go to the range with the mindset of, right, let's sort this shit out. And then during the journey, actually realized, let's not go overboard here. Let's just consider in your last few rounds, you've shot a 38, a 32, then you've had a bad round. So let's just calm things down a little bit. And I just thought about, a few little things I wasn't very happy with in my last round. And I thought, okay, let's just look at minor tweaks. There'll be simple little, there'll be probably simple fixes I can think about. So the two things I needed to fix were, so every now and then there'd be a hook that was coming back off the tee. And I just wasn't striking it quite as I wanted to in the round before. So I just thought, okay. So I made some subtle changes to my grip. Even just one thought in my head around ball striking. I mean, this will sound ridiculous, but again, it's just how my head works. My thought process was almost right. Imagine your shoulder is actually mirroring the club face. Now that sounds ridiculous, but what I mean by that is almost think about using your left shoulder to actually start the downswing rather than any, like, don't start with your arms, don't use your wrists at all. Just concentrate on using that left shoulder and turning and pivoting. And actually, you know what? Found some consistency. So there you go. I mean, that's not a top tip because it probably won't work for anybody except for me. But, you know, if it works for you, it works for you. Now, I will obviously follow this up by saying this was only a rain session. You cannot trust anything with a rain session. So I'm not trusting it. But at least I had a nice time. I had a very nice time down the range.
I think there is something in that. As much as we're not coaches, a good friend of mine that Chris and I have both played with, he plays off of five, I think. So he's a very, very good golfer. And he went through a phase where his only swing thought was keep the left shoulder slightly in front of the right the whole time. That allowed him to drop the club in the slot, come down, create a little bit more lag. And he was just trying to keep that left shoulder in front of the right for as long as he could before he then, you know, fired through on the downswing. So I don't think that's a complete swing and a miss. I think it's, there's probably some legs in that.
Okay, well, I was making stuff up, but good to know there's actually, there might be something in it. That's always nice to hear. Annoyingly, no golf lined up for me this weekend. I'm away at a wedding. Not mine. It's not that quick. but I have just said to the chaps before we came on air that I've just cleared quite a few dates in my diary over the coming month to get a load of rounds in, because we just need to get out on the course as a trio a lot more than we have been doing. So I shall start building towards that. Chaps, anything more before we move on to the pros?
Yeah, I've got...
Okay, go Ben.
I've got two bits. One thing was, obviously, I had a... excuse me. An enforced layoff this past week. And one thing kind of got to Sunday, and I thought a weekend without golf is a weekend wasted. That's something that I thought was sat there like this. I don't like this. So we're going to change that. We're back out on the course this weekend. And also something that I'm thinking about trying, and it's going to have to get the green light from every single person that I play with every single time I turn up. But I started thinking the other day, I was like, okay, so what is my next step score-wise on the golf course? My personal best is 78. I've broken 80 three times, yeah. And kind of a score of getting 77, yeah, okay. But it's only kind of chipping away. 75 isn't really a big milestone in my head. So I'm like, right, okay, so what's the next big milestone apart from that? It was breaking par. Now, I'm nowhere near good enough to be doing this off the yellow. So I am, you know, something that's going to please you too. I'm dating a girl who plays golf. So when you were hoping that I was going to be playing less golf, if anything, I'm going to be playing more.
Yeah.
She obviously plays off the reds. So what I'm considering doing is, for a period of time, playing off the reds, but playing off scratch and just trying to get as close to par as we can. Seeing if that can, again, this is just a little trial and error thing. Seeing if that can then translate into better scoring in the yellows. Because once you start shooting better scores, you become more comfortable at shooting consistently in the 70s. Does that, if you do that for a period of time, you do that 5, 6, 7 rounds in a row, does that then translate into better scoring off the yellows? Talking about psychology, momentum and stuff, you know what it's like when you're on for a good score, you tend to shit your pants, right? With a few holes to go, because you're like, oh, I'm on for a good score here. Something tends to go awry. Well, what if you give yourself the best opportunity to do so by playing off the reds, getting way ahead of the count, and then getting comfortable with doing it? So now this is something that obviously anyone, what I've written down is, anyone who has a problem with it when I turn up and I suggest this and they say no, fair enough, I'll play off the yellows and play to my handicap. But I'm considering giving this a go and just playing off the reds and saying to everyone, right, I'll play off scratch. You can have my 12 shots, whatever. I'll play off scratch. And my goal is to just try and shoot as best I can. You both look really confused by this.
No, not confused. Got lots of questions. Can't believe you didn't tee us up with this one before the pod, and you're only throwing this at us live now. Tim, are you happy for me to ask the various questions that I've got?
Please go ahead, because I need to unscramble my brain on this.
Okay, so I kind of hear what you're saying. You're kind of saying, if I do a Phil Mickelson, go to the seniors tour, get a win on the seniors tour, I come back and win a major on the normal tour, right? That's kind of what you're saying. Yeah. Slight issue with this is the fact of, just because you're playing off the reds doesn't mean you're going to break 80, right? So what happens if you're playing off the reds and you hit 93? You're then completely fucked. You're like, well, my head's all over the place now. Because playing off the reds means that you can't just...
I think that says a lot more about your mindset than anything, mate, because I would turn up thinking, well, I'm comfortably breaking 93.
Okay. I'm excited for the first edition of You Off the Reds. So I think it would be a very different game. Second of all, you've got the handicap adjustment, which would actually adjust your handicap based off playing off reds. So you could actually legitimately play off reds and have the handicap, it would just reduce it to whatever.
Yeah, this is the reason why I said it's just playing off scratch is because it's something that we've spoken about before. It's taking out the handicap. It's taking out the Stableford scoring. It's wiping all that shit out, ignoring all of that, and just playing for a score each time. That's where I'm thinking, right, just play off scratch. And then I'm literally just trying to shoot, just build up a tally, build up a total of numbers, and then see where that ends up. And then, I don't know, work out the Stableford afterwards if it's a competitive round. So,
yeah, So I don't have any issue with you playing off the front tees, because let's be honest, that's the way that golf is going to go. It's going to be front, middle, back. And I think that's right. I have no issue with anyone playing off front tees, middle tee, whatever. Like, that's fine. Is it just purely psychological? You think if you can break 80 on the reds multiple times, that will give you confidence to break 80 on the yellows?
Yeah, it's getting confident being around a lower score. Like I said, we all seem to, you know, we've all got the game to shoot better than our current personal best, but we get near shooting a personal best and we tend to go to pot. Well, what if you just constantly hang around your personal best off tee box, which makes the course 400 or 500 yards shorter in some cases? Because you'd like to think if you're taking, you know, into a par five and you've got a 400 yarder and I'm going hybrid, you know, 8 iron, say, it's going to make scoring a lot easier, you'd think.
Right. Questions from me. First question from me. Would you say you have any issue with this hitting distances on a golf course?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Why do you think you're going to score better playing off the reds?
Like I said, if you're playing a far par five, which is 400 yards instead of 500 yards, you know, you should I should really be making the green in two, because I'm taking, like I just said, I'd be taking a hybrid 8 iron versus a driver hybrid from the 500 yards.
But as we just said, that would be like
asking the question of, would you rather a pitching wedge in your hand or a 7 iron? That's the argument is, like, you're always going to rather the pitching wedge, because the dispersion of where you're likely to put the pitching wedge, it's always going to be closer than if you had a 7 iron in your hand. So naturally, you're just going to score better on a shorter course. Like the course we played, so I'm playing again Epping Golf Club this Saturday with the two lads who are fairly new to the game. This will actually be quite a good test for it, because off the yellows, it is pretty much on any other course, it would be the red tee distance. I think the course stretches out to, it's par 68, 5,600 yard course. So it's not long by any means. And there was only two occasions the last time I played it where I thought, I could probably take driver here. This is when the driver was still broke. And I didn't feel like I played good golf at all. And I think I shot 81. So that's where I'm like, right, naturally, if you're playing a shorter course, you're taking a lot more wedges in.
You played 2 handicap.
No, not on the day. This is where I mean. I was like, I didn't play well, but still played relatively close to handicap, which shouldn't really be the case if you're not playing that well.
Would it not just be better to play from the yellows on shorter courses?
But then that you're then limiting yourself to, what, 3 golf courses? Whereas if I play off the reds, I can play every course that all of us are going to play.
Yeah, but where I'm going with this, just hear me out. So basically, where I'm going with this is, like, you freely admit that distance is not a problem in your game. Yep. You're not shooting over par because you don't have the distances in the bag, right? It's more likely to be, being honest, not wanting to throw under the bus, it's things like throwing shots away or making mistakes around the green or putting.
That's more
the stuff that's going to cost you breaking par rather than just hitting distances. I mean, you hit the ball further than both of us do. So why is removing a bit of distance automatically going to transfer or translate into hitting par?
It's the same as what I've just said. Would you rather a pitching wedge in your hand or a 7 iron? Same stroke, your center of the fairway. Would you rather a pitching wedge or would you rather a 7 iron?
It's
just a confidence thing. Like I said, once you start hitting those scores,
It's nothing to do with skill. This is an entirely psychological experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So can I flip this?
Yeah.
How would it work the other way? And actually, you start playing off the tips, the back tees more, and then you then come forward and play off the middle tees, knowing, hey, you know what? I can hit handicap off the back tees. I can almost break 80 off the back tees. Off the middle is going to be easy. Because again, as distance isn't an issue, surely you could play fairly, like, I would fully back you to play fairly similarly off the back tees off most courses, assuming that it's a fairly similar layout, etc.
I mean, to be honest, this whole idea works completely on the basis that you believe you will shoot, what is it, 11, 12, 11? 11 shots better purely by virtue of playing off the red tees.
I'm just thinking as close as possible. I'm just saying, like, getting as close as I can down into the 70s and just getting down there.
Okay.
So whites, what, a lot of courses that I've played and we've played, whites and yellows, I don't feel like there's much difference. I always feel the same stepping onto the whites. I think there's just something about stepping onto the red tees that I might just be like, right, today's the day. Boom, let's do it. Let's go out there.
Have you ever played off the reds?
No. And that's where I'm like, this is just, it's just a fun idea that I'm thinking, why not give it a go? Like I said, I'm dating a girl who's fairly new to the game of golf, within reason. She's going to be playing off the reds. The chances are we're going to be going out and playing two balls on a fairly regular basis, hopefully. And you know what it's like when there's yellow tees like 50 yards back of the red ones. And then you kind of, you pass each other on the fairway. And the only time you ever really talk to each other is going to be on the greens. And it just gives us the chance to...
I don't disagree with that. From a social point of view, I think, and again, I have zero issue with anyone playing off the front tees. Like, it's just, it's not a, not an issue. This is a no-lose situation for me and Tim.
Oh, 100%.
You either come back and you've scored 73 and it makes you look like a freaking genius and makes the pod therefore look good, or you come back and you score 93 and me and Tim are just having a field day. So It's a no-lose situation.
This is what I said. It's like, for me, it's like, it's an experiment I'm thinking of trying just to see if it makes any difference. Because I feel like I don't feel stuck, but I'm like, the gap of my next real big target, you know, beating my personal best by one, it's still hitting your personal best, but it doesn't really get the juices flowing. So I'm like, right, well, let's kind of make the game a little bit easier and try and play a little bit closer to the hole and see if we can go way below the personal best and see if that breaks the psychological thing.
Okay, so wait, question. Do you believe, and you may not have looked at the actual stats, is you're saying your limiting factor right now for big change in your game is mental? You're not saying that it's not, you're losing six shots around through shit short game. There's no part of your game that you could really work on.
No, but I think it's a case of, it's like when we were playing last weekend, when I was on form, when I felt good, the front nine we spoke about, anytime I put any club in my hand, I was like, this is going well. I feel good with this. I feel good. I felt confident with the chip. Even if I weren't to hit the best shot and put myself in the best position, I was confident standing over it. Of course, I've got a lot of room for improvement across the board because I'm not a professional and I'm still playing off.
Is there one area? Like, is there one area that you go, I could knock off three shots around, like, if I just improved chipping around the green, or and I could turn?
Currently, it's my 100 and in wedge shots. Absolutely, my putting has been so streaky recently, but chipping, I've spoken about quite a bit recently. I feel like I've been, for me anyway, I feel like I've been on fire with my chipping. Stats are generally pretty good. I mean, I'm getting up and down in a lot of occasions, leaving myself one putt quite a lot. There's just been some times recently where anything from 100 in, just not committing on the shot, and it's been shit, which would be the type of shot I've been leaving myself a lot if I start playing off the reds. So, I think for me, massively, it's a mental thing at the moment, because as I've said, you know, if we go back every week, people are probably sick of hearing me saying it. I feel like it's there. I just can't put all facets of the game together in one round. It's always like, I missed a drive here. I missed a chip here. Putting was shit. Iron play was shit. And yeah, it's a confidence. See if the confidence is there.
Okay. What we'll do, here's what we'll do. We're going to put this to the test. So we're out as a trio in the coming weeks. Shall we just do this? Chris and I will play off the yellows with our usual handicaps. You can play off the red, playing off scratch, and we'll see who wins.
I'm up for that challenge.
You can play off red with your adjusted handicap because it will knock the
shot. No, he's talking about playing off scratch.
Yeah. Okay.
How should we do this? How should we do this?
Well, the world handicap system adjusts, right? So if he's playing off the red, the forward tees, it would adjust based off that. So what are you off now? 11, Ben?
12.
So I imagine it would go down to, let's say, 8, 9. I don't know. Like, I'm just guessing. So okay. I think that puts you already into that that alone is a psychological shift, right? Because then that gets you used to playing off single figures. Like, in it, you could look at it from that point of view. But yeah, I'm of course happy to test anything. And also, Ben, I want to know, and I want after the next maybe like two or three rounds, like, are you tracking your stats? Like, do you know? Yeah, so maybe next time I want you to tell us, like, okay, where is the biggest bang for your buck? Like, where could you work on and get the most improvement?
For sure. Yeah, I'd be keen for that.
Yeah, and I really hope
track your, I want to see, like, compare greens and reg, fairways hit. You say you're out this weekend?
Yeah, on the shorter course. We'll be off the yellows, but like I said, it is virtually playing off the reds on any other golf course. 5,600 course, it's short.
Okay, so next time you go off the reds, let's log your greens and reg, fairways hit, and let's see if there's any difference.
Yeah,
it'd be hilarious if it goes backwards, by the way.
I may still score significantly better because you're then, you know.
Have either of you played, this is kind of going off topic, have either of you played Sunningdale Heath? Sunningdale Heath is a ridiculously amazing golf course. It's 18 holes. It's the old Sunningdale Women's Club. And it's mostly par threes, a couple of par fours. But the condition of the course is just, like, unbelievable. It's next door to Sunningdale. Like, and it's kept in beautiful, beautiful condition. For a whole course of par threes and maybe two par fours, it will eat you alive. Like, distance is not the issue. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, distance is, if you wanted to work on your 100 yards and in game, or even just your par three game, that is the course that I would go and play over and over and be like, okay, if I can play well there, I would honestly back myself to play well anywhere, just because your iron game would be so good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of short course, I don't think necessarily means easy, is what I'm saying.
I agree.
Very, very interesting detour. None of us saw that.
I also really hope Tim didn't have anything else for us planned to talk about, because you've totally sideswiped us there with that topic.
I didn't expect it to be quite so much of a curveball. I expected you to be like, we'll have a quick chat, mate. But we quite like it. Let's all give it a go, but fair play.
Right, so don't worry, listeners. I've just crossed two items off the agenda list for this week, but we'll journey on. Right, let's move on to the pros. Northern Trust this weekend. It finally happened. Tony Finau wins.
He just needs a Monday. He just can't finish on a Sunday. He needs a Monday finish.
Right, now the door's open. Are the floodgates really going to open? And is he just going to start barreling in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7?
No, if you ask me, because the field out there is still too strong for him to do that. What I will say is, however, if he can continue to hit approach shots like he hit this weekend, then he will absolutely prove me wrong, because if you watch the highlights back, it's like every approach is to within 3 or 4 foot.
Some of his long irons were ridiculous. I think we saw him hit a 5-iron yesterday on... Was it the par 5? Can't remember what hole it was. Left it's like 2 feet. You're like, that is it. He was just absolutely striping it. And the shot trace had no movement in it. It was just gun straight, 2 feet from the pin, tap in, eagle, thank you. Moving on.
Well, it's like, Lisa, the commentator, like, moments before was like, it's been however many hundreds of thousands of holes since he last had an eagle. And then he hit his approach shot. And I'm like, well, this will probably be that.
Did either of you notice? And I don't know if this is a new. This might.
Can I just say? I think Tony will get another win in 2021. I don't think it'll be opening the floodgates, because, as Tim says, I think just the top, even like the top 30, like, there's just so many players that are now showing that they can win, which is awesome, by the way, and. But I do think it will give him. I actually do. Wouldn't be surprised to see at least one more Tony Finau win this year in 2021.
I'm not saying he won't win again this year. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be the catalyst for
6 wins or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's going to happen.
There's a change of mind from a major perspective now that he's finally got one over the line. Do you think he's going to win one?
No,
nope,
not yet.
think again, the only one he'd have a chance on would be a PGA where it's long and he can kind of hack himself out. I think US Open would be too tough for him to miss, but PGA might have a chance. I don't think he'd win anything else.
This will be one of those classic sound bites that we're playing back in a year's time where he's won two majors and we're just looking like right idiots.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the US team rankings of the Ryder Cup at the moment, I mean, even if you just look at the guys that are ahead of it, and this is obviously just talking about US players, Morikawa, Johnson, DeChambeau, Koepka, Thomas, then around him you've got Schauffele, just won the Olympics, Jordan Spieth on the way back, Harris English, apparently out of nowhere is now just absolutely flying.
A worldly player.
Yeah. and that's even before you get down to the likes of, you know, Webb, Daniel Berger, Cantlay. There's just the field of just, to be honest, unless this probably will come back to bite me. So I'll preface that right now. I think when you've got Morikawa, to be honest, still DJ, it's almost like if he was going to come and have a run, there's part of me which think that time has been and gone. Just because the field now is too strong, personally. But you know what? I'll probably get this completely wrong, and he'll probably go on a streak of three majors in the next.
No, I think it's really interesting. And am I going to go here just because it might sidetrack us slightly? I listened to an interview the other day with the PGA commissioner. Just how American is that? By the way, it's fucking great. The PGA commissioner.
Just that accent. One more time first.
Not very good. The questions they kept asking were, does this generation need a Tiger? You know, is there a Tiger void? Which obviously the answer is yes. But, you know, is there going to be someone who comes through and transcends the game like Tiger in this generation? And what he was saying was, you know, we've got the Morikawas, we've got these players coming through, but it is so competitive right now, and it literally just read off the list of names that you did, Tim, and was just like, you know, they're all capable of winning on any given, like they are all capable of winning, and that's quite incredible to watch. And I don't disagree. I think that is fantastic to watch.
I don't know whether you this is kind of following on from your point, Chris. I don't know whether either of you two listened to the Foreplay podcast with Pat Perez recently. So Pat Perez come through with Tiger, has played with him since he was a kid. And he said, you know, Tiger is just an animal. He said the closest person to him talent-wise is Rory, but he doesn't have the, as Pat Perez called it, which I quite like, the fuck you mentality of he turns up to a tournament and goes, fuck you, I'm winning. Who's coming second? He doesn't have that. He said now the closest thing to Tiger in terms of mentality, behavior-wise, and the way that he plays on the golf course is Jon Rahm. And he was tipping, he was like, Jon Rahm, this is Pat Perez, Jon Rahm will go on and dominate the game in the next few years. He was like, he will be the closest thing to Tiger in this generation, but he still won't come close because of the fact that Tiger was Tiger and this generation is the snowball from Tiger of where everyone is now launching it miles and it has a ridiculous all-round game.
So really quickly, going back to what Chris said, I think it's a really interesting question that was posed, and I think it's actually two questions at the same time. So A, is there a void from Tiger? Yeah, of course. Absolutely is. Does the public or the game need another person to come and dominate it like Tiger? No, in my opinion, because there's such a star-studded cast now where you've literally got 25, 30 guys that could be in the shot of winning every major. I mean, those guys we talked about, those are just the US team. You know, we've not even talked about Jon Rahm. Yeah. So I think... I don't doubt Finau's ability at all. I'm saying I think there's only maybe three, four, maybe five guys in the world right now that could go on a streak because the field is that good.
And I agree with you. And I think it's an interesting problem that the tours have, right? Because, and this was a business podcast that I was listening to, so it was kind of, the questions were more business folk. Like, it was talking about the allegiance between the PGA and the European Tour. And when they were talking about the void, they were talking though, like, you know, you could say to us, the public, that Tiger was playing on a crappy little course in the middle of nowhere on a rainy Wednesday, and the world would be watching. And what they were saying was there isn't a player right now that could have that same effect from a media point of view. And I don't disagree with that. And I think this was kind of my interpretation. This kind of plays into the whole, what was it, the player, basically the social media thing, right? They need to create media superstars, right? They need to create these characters that people get behind and become fanatic about to be able to even get close to something like that.
I don't know whether you two agree with this, but I don't think we're ever going to see an athlete like Tiger again, because he come through before the social media generation.
Yeah.
You know, and there was all of the press was about him. Whereas now, because they're all their own, as we've seen with all the ridiculous silhouettes of their own logos, they're all their own brand in their own right. So they're already pumping their own image out there. But Tiger didn't really need to do it because everyone did it for him, because it was kicking everyone's ass from such a young age. Whereas nowadays, everyone knows about the good players already coming through. So I kind of feel like once they reach that top status, unless they go on and absolutely blitz the whole field like Tiger did, which I don't think is possible with how competitive it is now, I don't think we're ever going to see another Tiger again. Hopefully. I think that is the state. You know, golf's in a great state now. And you listen to any of the pros, even someone as good as Phil, as successful as he was, they all thank Tiger for the revolution of the game. And I think that's why golf is now one of the biggest sports in the world. And it's one of the most played sports. And I just don't think we're going to see that again because of that.
I think as well, I think what he probably did, and we've somehow managed to turn this into a Tiger Woods podcast, but that's no bad thing. I think he probably brought new levels of both athleticism, professionalism, and kind of, I agree with the fuck you attitude bit, the kind of almost the mental combativeness to it. And I think a lot of the guys have now taken on from that, because look, I mean, not all golfers, but most golfers now are genuine athletes, and they are, you know, really, you know, they probably work as much on the mental side of things as they do the physical side of things. So I think the way he changed the game has done so that I think you're probably right. No one can, there's probably not the vacuum there was when he maybe came to the scene for someone to change it like he did, unless, you know, someone comes and changes it in a way that we can't even think about right now.
But I think that will happen. I think there will be, you know, no one pictured someone like a Tiger coming in and doing that, right? No one imagined it. And I think there will be something that happens, not soon, you know, in the next two decades, maybe, that something happens and we're like, did not see this happen.
The thing is, though, you know, we spoke about it when he, sorry to interrupt, the kind of counter to that, and the reason why I also think that it won't happen is, you know, Colin Morikawa, you know, won the Open recently. We started reeling off the stats and how it almost mirrors Tiger. But yet, it's Colin Morikawa. And it's not Colin Morikawa, he's going to be the best player of all time. It's like, yeah, he's, you know, he's doing great. But there's not that like massive pumped up, you know, hype of this is going to be the best golfer of all time.
I think if he did get that, it would work against him. I think it's good that it's not doing that. I think if Tony Finau had had that fuck you mentality, all those tied twos, tied seconds would be wins. And yeah. I think he would have had a couple of seasons of absolutely having a field day. I think Koepka has the fuck you mentality when he goes to majors. I think it's there. I don't know. It's difficult. We don't know these people personally, do we? So it's difficult to say who has what mentality, but.
Yeah, I don't think someone like a Jack Nicklaus had a fuck you mentality.
Yeah, we don't know that.
We don't know that. We don't know that. But
I think we only think that about John Rahm because he's passionate. Yeah, would be true. My opinion. Like we see him going, you can see him wanting to win. I don't think the others don't want to win, but it's what's that level of no. I've already won before they've even stepped foot on the course.
It'll be interesting to see if the hype really starts to grow around Morikawa, if he starts to reel off more majors and more tournaments at the rate of which Tiger was, because we know he's not far from it at the moment. If he gets a few more in, it'll be interesting to see if the media frenzy really kicks up, and that's when it kind of takes off. Maybe it will. Maybe Morikawa will be the guy, because he's gone off like a steam train so far. And who's to say he won't do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been proved wrong before on this podcast. Well, I mainly have been proved wrong on this podcast before.
Every week you get proved wrong about something. Yeah,
so no doubt everyone will delight in us chatting nonsense when all the stuff we talk about translates and doesn't happen. Moving on quickly, because I really, really want to talk about something in the ladies' game. Solheim Cup. I still can't believe this. You guys aware of Leona Maguire's achievement over the weekend?
Yeah.
So
the amateur, yeah? The one who played in shorts.
I mean, that's not... Okay. Basically, she's made history this weekend because... this is why I'm saying I can't believe it. She's the first Irish woman to be selected for the Solheim Cup.
Not who I thought it was.
That, to me, you would think Ireland's pretty golf... heavy nation, right? First Irish woman is taking this long to be represented to represent Ireland in a Solheim Cup. Hopefully will be, I think Padraig Harrington's come out and talked about this a little bit, saying how this needs to be huge for the game and huge for the game in Ireland. You know, this, as I say, a traditional stable, if you like, of golfing nations around the world, that hopefully this can just be a catalyst for the ladies game in Ireland. I just couldn't believe that when I heard that was the first time someone from that country was going to be represented in that event. Something I wanted to mention.
Amazing. Can I just explain my shorts comment before? It might have been Leona. Oh, I can't remember now. Well, there was an interview and I cracked up, and they asked. It was pouring down with rain. It was freezing cold. They're like, "You're in shorts." She was like, "Yeah, skin's waterproof." And I was just like, "Brilliant! You've just ended the
as a few of the Americans are walking around with earmuffs on and winter gloves. She was rocking around in shorts. I do know who you mean.
And I cracked up, and then you can see the interview. And you go, "Yeah, okay, great."
But I'm glad we've made that one absolutely clear. I was a little bit concerned by where you went with that opening line. I'll be honest. So that's awesome news, Leona. I mean, I will temper it slightly because I am looking at the US team for the Solheim Cup, which is, you know,
strong.
Nelly Korda, Danielle Kang, Ali Ewing, Lexi Thompson, Jessica Korda. although Yeli Mino got the call up. So having been in the position early this year when we worked out, I can't remember what the exact figure was. It was something like she'd had basically the vast majority of her career earnings wiped out because she got a slow play earlier in the year. So hopefully that will move things back in the right direction for her. So that was a nice point to mention. Nothing more from me before we move on from pros. Anything else you chaps want to cover?
The only thing that I'll mention is, and I genuinely didn't think we'd ever say this, Victor Hovland, world's happiest man, snapping
his
putter.
Yeah. Good lad.
And then proceeding to putt with his wedge or a 9-iron and actually putting outstandingly well on the back nine. He does have a temper, or he does. Yeah. He is capable of...
If the happiest man in the world can lose his rag, it makes me feel a little less guilty about doing it.
Yeah.
To the extent that I do.
He was something like +6 through 7 or something for the day. And I think he finished on +6 for the day. But putting with a wedge, I mean, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, something, just one more thing for me, because that was what I was going to touch upon, is the news about Bryson announcing he's going to be in the long drive.
You were going to bring this up.
Don't know whether you two have seen the date of this competition. It's the day after the Ryder Cup finishes. So his first day of competition. Ryder Cup finishes on the Sunday, and then he competes on the Monday, the following day. So he basically has to cart out, I think it's in the States somewhere. So it's not It's not like he's traveling, you know, around the world or whatever. But you kind of think, where's his mind potentially going to be at? Is he really trying to rev up all his speed in the Ryder Cup? Is he going to start sending howitzers left, right, and center all over the course? Because long drive's a different animal. If he's going to be competitive in that, he needs to gain a lot of distance. How's that going to translate to the course in the Ryder Cup? For me, I see it as a positive as a European fan, because he's surely going to be thinking, oh, in a few days' time, I'm going to be doing this. He's going to be doing a lot of training to get quicker for that as well, which could mean he's very errant off the tee.
Well, even if he's just doing it as a kind of, oh, I just want to go and do a long drive competition and not necessarily, you know, work up for it. I'm not suggesting he's using the Ryder Cup as a warm-up event for a long drive competition. That would be nuts. But I don't know. If I was in a Ryder Cup team, I would be not making any plans for, let's say, the 4, 5, maybe 7 days after that event takes place, mainly because if you're in the winning team, sorry, all I'm going to want to do is go out with my teammates and other halves and, you know, if it's your style, go out and just party, you know, drink, be merry, celebrate with your team. I would just factor in, if I win the Ryder Cup, I'm just going to want to revel in it with my team. The fact that he's already thinking, oh, no, I'll just fly and go to a long drive competition the next day. It's like, all right, mate, well, you're...
It's something we've spoken about before. Europeans' chance is the fact that we have a team. Exactly. Americans tend to not have a team. This, for me, there was already the fraction between him and Brooks. This is just going to increase that, because they're going to be in the team room thinking, well, if we win, we're going to have this, you know, big celebration and you're buggering off.
And you're like, part of that.
Where's this team bonding, kind of team cohesion sort of thing? As a European fan, I absolutely love the news. I think it's brilliant for in competition and then kind of what it's likely to do to their team as well as his golf swing. I'd be interested to see how he holds it together, because I'm picturing it going all over the place.
I mean, I should have looked at this in advance, but I'm going to try and do this on the spot. I'm going to try and figure out what his match play record is, because I wouldn't automatically assume he's a great match play player.
Don't know.
Let me have a look.
There's no idea.
On the spot, Googling, which might be completely rubbish.
I feel like I've just got a feeling that he's pretty fragile upstairs, and I feel like in match play, he might... his record's not going to be great, because he tends to fall apart. Don't ever remember him featuring well in the match play events that are played on the PGA Tour.
I tell you what, a player that I wish was European right now is Cam Smith. Wish he was European right now, because he is...
Ship him in. Still can't believe the price you can get him at on DraftKings as well. Baffling.
I can confirm that Bryson's match play record is not good. In fact, his team match play record, he's 0 from 3.
So that's good.
And even in his individual match play, he's 1-1, drawn 1, lost 3.
Ooh. So he's got 1 point.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, okay, and now a question about why he's doing this and the motive behind this. Because these guys are, when you watch them play, they're significantly faster than what he is at the moment. You just check on Instagram and you check their numbers, the ball speed, the club head speed, a lot faster than Bryce at the moment. So he's got to do a lot of training between now and then. Fair enough. Who's to doubt him doing it? But is his motive here purely the pip? Because would he be doing it if there wasn't this dangling carrot of being the best on social media to generate interest in the game of golf? Because to me, it just screams out a publicity stunt to just keep his name relevant. I don't know. Where do you stand on that?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think he's so fixated on, I'm going to get my club speed to X and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. And maybe he thinks that entering long drive competitions and training for that is going to get him to that point. I literally think it's as simple as that. I don't think it's as calculated as the social media prize or socials, or I literally think he will think of it as another step on the path to getting to swing speed X, drift distance X, club head speed X. I literally think it's just that.
I think he'd be doing it whether there was the pit or not.
Yeah. I think.
I don't think it harms his chances for getting a share of the whatever it is, 10 million or whatever, but I think he would be doing it even if it wasn't there.
Just something that I saw as soon as it came out, and I had a look immediately for the Ryder Cup dates, because it was like those dates seem awfully close. Turns out they are, one day after each other. Kind of got to question the organisers of the long drive event to put it the day after the Ryder Cup. It's like midweek.
Yeah, where would they care?
Who's going to... It's start of a week, not of the weekend. Who's going to be there? Everyone's just going to be golfed out and just watch the Ryder Cup for 3 days. What are they thinking? I know it's a different game altogether, but you've got a question there. They're planning on that part.
I mean, I assume there's probably a tour event the week after as well, so they can't do it over the weekend, can they?
Yeah, true.
I don't know. It seems like the type of place where there'd be a lot of people having a few beers and getting quite rowdy, and posting that sort of event on a Monday night doesn't really float my boat.
Can you just imagine a long drive competition? Is that the kind of place that the guys that shout mashed potatoes just go? every 30 seconds, like, mashed potatoes! Just
go and get their practice in.
They go to their pill, yeah.
Who knows? Right. Moving on. I have scratched things off the agenda for this week, but there is something I do want to talk about. So I pulled this together because, you know what, I'm going to put you on the spot. Fellas, how comprehensively do you think you know the rules of golf?
Oh, God.
Oh, shit. No, I mean, woefully.
I can tell you I once tried the advanced test on the RNA website and I didn't understand 80% of the words used in the questions.
My extensive knowledge reaches to, so I regularly read kind of Golf Monthly and they have a section in there every time with golf rules. I think I went through three issues in a row. I tried to go through it, got it wrong, didn't know the rules, so I was like, well, I'm never going to read that section again. So
you should be reading.
It's just like, it's like taking a test and failing it every time.
Well,
that's what happened again, but it sounds like
handily this is music to my ears, because what I've done, I've pulled together a load of scenarios and I want you guys to try and tell me what you think the ruling would be or what the situation would be. But I've put them into bite size on the course situation. So I've kept the language simple and jolly. So don't you worry. Right.
This is where we're like, so Ben doesn't actually break 80 because he gets two shot penalties there, three shot penalties there.
Right. Scenario one. You're in the middle of the fairway, got 7-iron in your hand. During your backswing, your club head flies off. You complete the swing but miss the ball. What's the rule?
As pals, I would happily say, well, sorry, mate, you're probably quite upset about that. Don't count it as a stroke and just pull another club and go again. But knowing some of the ridiculous rules of golf, I reckon it's a one-stroke penalty, as if you did take a swing and a miss at any regular shot. So I don't think it matters that the club head fell off. Golf's going to say, fuck you, that's a swing.
Interesting. Chris,
I don't know the answer, obviously. Mental situation, I can't even believe. Is there actually a rule for this? Like, this is written.
Apparently.
And you haven't hit, like, you haven't hit a branch or anything. It's literally just flown off.
During your backswing, club head flies off. You complete the swing, but miss the ball, obviously, because you don't have a head on your club anymore.
It's the phrasing of complete the swing that is throwing me off here. Like, that's the key point.
This is quite a horrifying picture, isn't it? Losing your 7-iron head.
I'm just, for sake of podcast, going to go opposite to Ben. I think that you would not be penalised for that and you would get to replay the shot.
Okay, so if the club head flies off in your backswing, it doesn't count as a stroke. If, however, the club head comes off in your downswing, that's a penalty.
Wow.
What? Why? No, it's almost that. It's almost them implying that it's your fault the club head fell off in your downswing, but in your backswing it's not your fault, so you don't get a penalty.
Also, if I was watching Ben, he's just there in the fairway, like he doesn't swing that slowly that I can go, that definitely came off in the backswing. Like,
well, I guess you judge it by. So I think this is probably where the ruling
launching 80 yards behind you down the fairway, back towards the team.
I think it's if the club, it sounds like if the club head goes behind you or in front of you. If it goes behind you, it sounds like that's fine. They don't care about that. If it goes in front of you, that's the problem.
Right.
There you go. Okay. Right. Wow. So that's one. Okay. That's scenario one. Right. Scenario two.
And is it just a one-shot penalty?
One-shot penalty.
One-shot penalty. Okay. Right. Noted.
You flush a 9-iron. And then, to your horror, realize you've actually hit a 6-iron. You fire the ball through the window of the clubhouse. What happens if you find the ball on the carpet of the lounge that's overlooking the green?
Oh, shit. I'll go first with this one, just because I've seen clips of players hitting off, like, temporary
stands.
Areas, I saw a clip of Tony Romo doing it. I reckon it's going to be a play as it lies situation, and you just pick up the tab for the window.
I agree. I think you would play it.
So, if the clubhouse is not marked as out of bounds, you may take your next shot without penalty. You could even open a window or a door if you wanted.
Great.
Is there any clarity on houses? I mean, I suppose they would be marked
OB.
Right. Okay.
The OB is the key.
I would, part of me, can you imagine, vice versa, you've played that shot and you're walking up to the clubhouse. Immediately, everyone is laughing, they're having a right go, whatever. And then you turn around and you say, open that door.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, legend status. All of a sudden, you move up to that next level of, he's going to play it.
I'm not sure many people, if any, would have the balls to go and try and play that ball. I would be very quickly ducking my head and walking straight towards the car park. Or just nudging into the reception and saying, that was me, I'll pick up the tab. I certainly wouldn't be making it known that was me, and then proceeding to go and try and play my next shot.
What if your next shot was a worldie? Yeah. What if your next shot goes two inches
from we don't know that, do we? We can't predict for sure. Just like I can't predict I'm going to break par playing off the Reds. It's just a thought, isn't it?
So in that situation, Tim, could you, or are you not allowed to, if it's not OB, do you have to go play it? Like, is it the rules that you would have to go play it?
You don't have to play it. You can obviously take a shot penalty.
Or do you deem it lost, take a drop?
Yeah, that's your choice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Take a drop. No closer to the hole on the other side of the clubhouse. Thin another one through the front window.
You have to take a drop back where you hit your shot from.
Correct.
You'd have to take the drop there.
That's quite a boring twist.
Moving on, because I've got more scenarios.
Great, go.
You are in a bunker. There is a small butterfly that is sat behind your ball, which, despite your best coercement, will not move. Are you allowed to move the butterfly? So you've tried to, like, I don't know.
Did you say it's on your ball or on the grass behind it?
So it's in a bunker. It's behind your ball.
Key information.
it's not even key information. That's not actually key. It could be anywhere. Okay. There's a butterfly sat behind your ball. Are you allowed to move it?
You'd be allowed to move a loose impediment. You'd be allowed to move a stone. So I'm going to say yes, you'd be allowed to move it.
Based on the fact that I remember Bryson complaining about ants on his ball before. I'm going to say no. Unfortunately, that butterfly is about to meet its maker and you have to hit it and you've got to play through him or it's a penalty.
If you move that butterfly when it's sat behind your ball, that's a one-shot penalty. However, if it's fluttering away above your ball, swing away. No penalty. You can deal with that.
hang on. So I move the butterfly, like I pick the butterfly. Is it because I've touched the sand or what? Like, is it just...
You're improving your lie.
What if there's like a dead rodent behind my body?
Yeah.
Play it as it lies.
Okay, that I can't. That is bonkers.
Yeah, particularly I've watched some golf tournaments. This is going to the extreme, but I've watched some golf tournaments fairly recently in Florida that have alligators. What do you do if it lands? If there's just an alligator sleeping in the bunker, the ball lands near that. You play it as it lies, buddy.
I'd probably take the one shot penalty in that situation. To be honest,
yeah.
Tim's taking a sandwich. He's connected with the alligator's tail. Tim's dead. Yeah, Tim's got it.
Yeah. He regrets informing you. Right. I'm excited about this next one because I can see someone like Ben doing this. Right. You're on the green. You've been struggling to read the greens all day. You have an idea. You take out a water bottle and you rest it on the green and use it as a spirit level to give you a read for how the green slopes.
Really clever idea.
What happens?
Definitely a penalty.
I have heard or saw something like this recently. I don't know if it was in a casual round or I saw something on TV or on YouTube. Is it a two-stroke penalty?
It's definitely a penalty. Like, that is absolutely not okay.
It's definitely not okay. It is a one-shot penalty, but it is absolutely not okay to do that.
Really good idea, though.
That's probably one of the easiest ones. Right. Next situation. Your playing partner has helped you find your ball, which has gone into the rough.
Thank you, mate.
You are about to take your next shot. He stands out beyond the out-of-bound markers to the right-hand side to kind of clear the way. You take your shot. You hit a massive shank that hits your playing partner. Nice. What happens next?
He dies.
Is the balloon down because it's hit him?
Good question. Very, very good question. So, if you hit your playing partner who is standing out of bounds and the ball finishes out of bounds, you get a free replay of the shot.
You're kidding me.
Wow. I'm just going to get you jumping about in the out of bounds section just in case next time we play.
Now, just to have a hang please, on. This does, please do not start throwing balls at your mates who are standing beyond the OB markers.
Hang on. So Ben stands to the right of me. He's OB. I shank a shot.
Yeah.
It smashes into Ben's shins.
Yeah.
The ball lands and finishes out of bounds.
Yeah.
I get a free drop to play the shot again.
Apparently.
And by extension of that, so say it bounces off my shin, because a shin is quite hard, and it rebounds back inbounds, is that then a case of play the next shot as it lies?
Correct.
Wow.
Mental.
Yeah.
Mental rule.
I don't understand.
I don't understand where that's coming from at all.
And also, because I kind of think with every single one of these rules, at some point, surely it's happened for someone to go, that needs to be in the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hang on a minute.
What?
And you can just imagine it. Well, I hit my shot and it hit Ben and it didn't come back in play, right? Well, it was heading 20 yards out of play. Yeah, but if it hit a tree, it would have come back in. So therefore, I should get the shot again. That's what someone's gone. I mean...
I'm not being funny, mate, but if you'd caned a ball at me and your first thought was, I need to go and check with the rules official what the rule was, I would not be best pleased, I don't think.
I mean, that one, to be fair, that's the only one where I'm a little bit dubious of the source from where I found that one. That's the only one where I'm a little bit, just because I don't get the logic of that one, but
it sounds like it's a stupid enough rule for it to be real. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Sort of exactly. That's what I'm wrong with.
So I'm not saying that it's not real. That sounds exactly like something golf would do.
Yeah. Okay. Final one. And I think this is my favorite because a lot of the ones I've talked about are, to be honest, fairly unlikely to happen. This one I think is much more likely to happen. Okay, so you and your partner both hit your approaches onto the green. When you arrive at the green, you both realize you're playing a Pro V1 with a number four on it, and neither one of you have put an identifying mark on your ball. What is the rule?
Are we playing stroke play?
This is just normal stroke play.
I think it's a two-shot penalty for both.
I think it's a go back and re-hit because you can't identify who's whose.
Okay. So, rule, and there's an actual rule number behind this. This is how you know it's legit. Rule 12.2 states that in this event, both balls, if unable to be identified, are considered lost balls.
Yeah.
You are penalized a stroke, plus you have to go back and play your shot from the previous position.
Always, always, always mark your balls.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yeah.
Always, I mean, always put a mark. If that's not a lesson for...
that is the lesson.
And putting anything on your ball.
Just buy a Sharpie, have it in your bag, always put a mark on your ball.
Yeah.
So yeah, I might start doing that, Chris. I know you play Vices. I might just fiddle around my bag and be like, yeah, let's play a two. Let's try and match them up. That would be quite funny, wouldn't it?
Why are you doing that? Because then you're losing a shot.
Yeah, you're then you'd also be a...
Yeah, I realized I'd started saying it and I'd gone down that that way and couldn't back out. So I was like, fuck
it, you have a collection of balls marked in the way that your mate marks them.
And then
so that when you get to the green before him, you just drop one down and be like, sorry for it, pal, them's the rules.
And even put one in the hole just for shits and giggles. Oh, there's one in the hole as well.
So there you go. That was my silly little game of weird golf rules. Fair play. I think a lot of those.
That's fantastic. I like that. That was a really good feature.
It just further highlights how difficult rules are to pick up, and when new people do play the game, it's, you know, I know it's quite easy to get annoyed with them for not knowing the basics, but even the basics, there's still quite a long list of those.
One more that I missed. right. This is not a really complicated one, but just one that I think a lot of people would get wrong. It's a midwinter round. You hit the ball into a bunker that's completely filled with water. What in the rules are you allowed to do?
Wait, say that again.
So you hit into a bunker, which is completely full of water.
Yeah.
So your ball is underwater in the bunker. What in the rules of golf are you allowed to do?
The whole bunker is full of water, unplayable. Yep. So you take the ball out, you drop behind the bunker, free drop.
So that's what I thought. But under this source that I have, the only relief allowed is to move your ball within the bunker to wherever there is less water. Dropping out of the bunker counts as a one-shot penalty. Now, this to me, I'm really unsure about the legitimacy of the source, because exactly as you say, Chris, that your response was my not even having to think about it response. If it's in a bunker, it's a water hazard that's not designed as a water hazard, you should be getting a free drop. It's how I would play it.
That is my guess. I don't know the answer.
I know rules are rules and you know, should be followed, but if that ever happens and you two
I'm not enforcing
stick
that
to that, one. I'm gonna be pretty pissed off with you.
Yeah, I'm not enforcing that one. I'm gonna take an objective rule on that one. I am not enforcing that one.
Fair. I think I would also take the drop all day long than taking the swipe at that.
Most courses on like comp day or whatever, if they know there's been a lot of rain, they'll say, by the way, on hole, whatever bunker five will definitely be out of play. If it is full of water, drop out. And they'll normally say it before starting.
I think that's where I've got it from because pretty much every course I've gone to in winter has quite often said, if your ball lands in the bunker where there's water,
you're ground under repair or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that might just be a local ruling depending on the day rather than a...
Correct.
An actual...
Talking about very wet bunkers, I know this is doubling back to the pros, but what a job the ground staff did to get the course in any kind of playable condition this week. Because you see the pre-photos and shots and the videos of the water in the bunkers, they looked like ponds. And for them to get them looking like sand again was huge. don't know how they did it.
Absolutely. Right, that pretty much brings us full circle, chaps. Anything more to say before we wrap up for this week? Chris, you've got
one thing. Okay. One thing. I just want to give Ben a bit of a shout out here for his performance in DraftKings. Ben, how many points did you score this week?
539.
Crikey.
539. So this week, DraftKings had a competition on. I don't know what the entry fee to this is, by the way. I only saw it yesterday. $4 million Fantasy Golf World Championship. $1 million to first place. The guy or woman or whoever it was, person who finished first, 528.5. So, Ben, would have finished top and won $1 million. Also, things to note in this.
I don't know why you told me that. That's like saying to someone, your weekly lottery numbers of X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D, and E, they come up this week, but you didn't buy a ticket, you dickhead. What are you thinking?
I'm assuming the entry fee to this tournament, because you often see a DraftKings.
For fuck's sake!
Also, just to also kick you while you're down, it's a really, really good performance from you, but you're still below me in the Sunday Red League on DraftKings.
Amazing, fantastic. Oh, also, what's quite interesting to note, there's someone who's entered two teams into this competition and has finished fourth and eighth. This is me being naive. I didn't know these competitions, this level of prize money existed on DraftKings. Finishing fourth won him $200,000 and finishing eighth won him $50,000. I don't know what the entrance fee was, but I've seen some of them and it's like thousands to enter, which is compared to our $2 competition that we're playing. Yeah, nuts. So yeah, well done, Ben.
Brilliant. Fucking thrilled. I was going to say, I had written down on my notes, it made it even sweeter. Not only did I beat you two, but the person who came second and we were dovetailing all weekend was my brother. Yeah. So it was a good weekend for the Fowlers boys. But now I've just found that out. It was shit. I don't know why I didn't enter the $8 bazillion tournament. This is bollocks.
If only you had a spare $30,000 to enter to the...
It's a joke. Absolute joke.
And you're welcome.
I hate you.
Ben, you always specifically laugh at me because my free team always does better than my paid team. This week, I actually entered the team from the free league into another $2 paid contest, and it won me $6. So happy days! Although I lost our match, which is the key thing. Lesson learned: in future, whatever team I pick for the free league, immediately swap out and put into the paid league. That's my lesson.
Well, there you go. Finished on a happy note, or a funny note, at least.
Yeah, I'm just gonna. I live on the fourth floor of a building. I'm just gonna go throw myself out the window.
No, please don't do that.
Don't do that. We need you back next week.
We need some sound bites next week.
We need to hear how the playing off the Reds goes.
Yes. Right, well, on that bombshell, I think that's probably about time to leave you. As always, thanks massively for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Cheers.
Catch you later.
See you later, guys.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. If you've enjoyed the show and our weird ramblings, please subscribe and also leave us a review from wherever you get your podcast from. It massively helps us to grow the podcast and to put even more into the show. The episode is brought to you by Sunday Red Golf, the best golf club in the world. For everyone from the sublime to the rubbish, the scratch to the hacker, we literally welcome everyone. We've got events, competitions, giveaways, offers, and loads more. Come and join for free over at sundayredgolf.co.uk. A Slice of Golf is also brought to you by Tour Champ. Want to settle once and for all who is the best golfer in your squad? Tour Champ is the easiest way to find out. Set yourself up now for free by visiting tourchamp.co.